You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Kai Rizdahl. This past weekend is going to be one of those that people remember for a long time, where they were and what they were doing as 20 years of American involvement in Afghanistan came to an unceremonious end. The details of that part of the story, how it happened and why, you have heard or read elsewhere. But with the government now gone and the Taliban in charge, there are some practical economic realities that have to be considered. The Taliban has an economic engine that has gotten it this far. The question, as Marketplace's Sabri Benishour reports to start our coverage today, is whether that is going to be enough for him to govern with.
The Taliban is well-funded.
The estimate has been that the Taliban makes tens of millions of dollars a year, sometimes hundreds of millions.
Vonda Felba-Brown is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She says a reasonable estimate would put the Taliban's recent budget at $100 million a year, although some reports suggest it's been as much as $1.6 billion. The money comes from a lot of places. Recently, Felba-Brown says the top source is taxes.
Broadly, the Taliban has taxed everything from government projects to international trade.
At the border, the Taliban taxes food, fuel, goods. Inside the country, it even taxes cell phone towers on penalty of blowing them up. Kidnapping for ransom and the opium trade have also bankrolled the Taliban. David Mansfield is a researcher and expert on Afghanistan's drug trade.
It's much less significant than the trade in legal goods.
His research in one province suggests income from taxing the opium, heroin, and methamphetamine trades was about 9% of the Taliban revenue there. But as much as the Taliban makes, it's a lot less than the budget of the Afghan government before it, which was around $11 billion. 75% of that came from international aid. That does not mean, necessarily, that donor countries will have a lot of leverage with the Taliban, says Matthew Levitt with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy.
The Taliban is not going to feel the kind of financial pinch that some in the West expect it will, because it doesn't feel the need or obligation to provide the level of services that the Afghan government did.
Meanwhile, over the past few years, the Taliban has been building or repairing relationships with former enemies, including China, Russia, and Iran. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
With apologies to Frederick the Great, or maybe it was Napoleon, sources are unclear, today's armies travel not on their stomachs, but on their military contractors. And as America's longest war comes to an end, so too does a business opportunity for those contractors. The United States has spent tens of billions of dollars over the past 20 years to those contractors to sustain its troops in Afghanistan, to feed them and house them and support them. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has the corporate side of the story of the day.
The U.S. military relied on contractors like KBR and DynCorp International for all sorts of things in Afghanistan.
For cooking, for driving, for delivering supplies. They were used across the board.
Linda Bilmes teaches public policy at Harvard. She says sometimes the Pentagon had so-called no-cost deals with contractors. Whatever a project cost, the government would pay.
The whole system was set up in a way to enable contractors to rip off the government.
One contractor, Supreme Food Service, pleaded guilty in 2014 to overcharging the U.S. military for food and water served in mess halls in Afghanistan. Mark Kanzian at the Center for Strategic and International Studies says there were also no-bid contracts, where a company got a contract without having to compete with other firms on things like price.
We didn't have a good sense about what it was going to cost, and we didn't have the people there who could do the negotiations or had the data. So contractors were basically able to charge whatever they wanted.
Kanzian says eventually that changed, and the Pentagon started negotiating better contracts. He also pointed out that it's very expensive to hire experienced people, like former military officers, to provide training and security. Dan Grazier served with the Marines in Afghanistan. He's now at the Project on Government Oversight.
You would see all these people who were obviously contractors, and we all knew that they were making a lot more money than we were.
And they have job security. The U.S. military has decided it wants contractors in the field right next to U.S. troops. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.